Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. At this time, we would like to welcome everyone to RD People Health and Wellbeing conference call to discuss its first quarter of 2019 results. The audio for this conference is being broadcast simultaneously through the internet in the website www.rd.com.br/ir. In that address, you can also find the slideshow presentation available for download. We inform that all participants will only be able to listen to the conference during the company's presentation. After the company's remarks are over, there will be a Q&A period. At that time, further instructions will be given. Should any participant need assistance during this conference, please press star zero for an operator. Before proceeding, let me mention that forward-looking statements are being made under the safe harbor of the Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1996. Forward-looking statements are based on beliefs and assumptions of RD management and on information currently available to the company. Forward-looking statements are not guarantees of performance. They involve risks, uncertainties, and assumptions because they relate to future events and therefore depend on circumstances that may or may not occur in the future. Investors should understand that general economic conditions, industry conditions, and other operating factors could also affect the future results of RD and could cause results to differ materially from those expressed in such forward-looking statements. Today with us are Mr. Marcilio Pousada, CEO, Mr. Eugênio De Zagottis, Investor Relations and Corporate Planning Vice President, and Gabriel Rosenberg, IR and Corporate Planning Director. Now, I will turn the conference over to Mr. Marcilio Pousada. Sir, you may begin your conference.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the presentation of first quarter 2019 RD. As always, Eugênio present the results and just before the question and answer, stress some points. Okay, Eugênio, please.
Hello, everybody. First of all, thank you all for attending our first quarter 2019 conference call. This was a challenging quarter in terms of margins. At the same time, when we look in terms of growth, when we look in terms of the trends we see in our market, I think there are very positive signals that prepare us to resume the kind of historic growth we have always had for our comps. We believe this quarter, in terms of profitability, is also an inflection point for the company. We ended the period with 1,873 stores in Brazil. We did 62 openings and 14 store closures during the period. I think one of the main highlights of the quarter was our retail market share. We saw 1.1 percentage point growth on a national basis, with improvement in every single market and with a gain of one percentage point in São Paulo, which I think was the main highlight here. We reached gross revenues of 4.2 billion, 15.3% consolidated growth with 1.9% mature store sales growth, which marks an improvement over the previous quarters, and I think paves the way for us to end the year at or around inflation. We had a 28% gross margin in the quarter, a 50 basis points margin pressure. Our EBITDA under the historic criteria, we had 270 million, 6.5% of EBITDA margin, a loss of 1.1 percentage points. When we look our IFRS numbers, and I'll detail more about IFRS in the next chart, we would have an EBITDA of 450 million and a margin of 10%, 90 basis points pressure over the previous year. The same with net income, 105.5 million under the historic criteria, 2.5% net margin, but then under the IFRS 16, 94 million, 2.3%. Finally, we had a cash flow of 210 million negative, and a total cash consumption of 203 million negative. On page four, we can talk a little bit about the IFRS. This is the first quarter that we report under the new accounting criteria, which urges to recognize our lease payment obligations as a liability and also recognize the rights of use relating to these assets as a fixed asset. The problem here is that when you think about rental expenses are substituted by depreciation plus interest expenses. As we can show here in the first part of the chart here, when we look over the whole contract life, the effect is neutral. So in the end of the day, the IFRS, over the whole contract term, it does not provide any economic effect. However, because the liability is higher in the beginning versus in the end of the contract, what happens is that the financial expenses start very high and then decreases progressively. As a result, there is a timing difference during the lifetime of the contract. So in the initial years of the contracts, we have negative pressure on net income, and in the final years of the contract, we have a positive effect on the net income. Having said that, because the Brazilian tax authorities don't consider the IFRS 16 for taxation purposes, the cash effect is absolutely zero. We're still paying the same lease obligations, despite the fact that they now consider rental plus interest expenses. And because the tax effect is also neutral, there is absolutely no cash effect or whatsoever. It's also important to mention that this is a criteria adopted on a global basis. But in Brazil, our rental contracts, they range from 5 years to 10 years, and we have the right of rescinding those contracts only by paying 3 months of rentals. This is a unilateral decision the company can take at any point in time. And as a result, we don't believe the IFRS adequately reflects the economics of the company. We will keep looking internally under the previous criteria, but we will report both criteria so the market can pick whatever criteria you want to track. When you look at the P&L here on the bottom left, the exact effect that I explained is very clear here. When we consider the IFRS, we have 145 million less in operating expenses because the rentals are no longer an operating expense. But then we have 136 million of additional depreciation and 27 million of additional interest expenses. So since our existing contracts are more in the beginning of the year than in the beginning of the term than in the end of the term, there is a negative net income effect of 11.6 million in this first quarter. But regarding taxation, we pay the normal taxes with the same net income, and the difference is treated as a deferred tax asset. When you look on the right in the balance sheet, we see a large non-current asset, which is the rights of use, but we also see the same increase in liability, part in current liabilities and the biggest part as a non-current liability. Okay, back to business. Page 5, store development. So we ended the cycle with 1,873 stores. We opened 62 stores in the quarter and closed 14 stores. By the end of the quarter, 35.6% of the stores, they were still under maturation. Here on page 6, we have a very interesting chart that shows what's happening to the market. And this has to do with the comp improvement and with the accelerated share gains we have posted in the quarter. And I think it also helps us predict how this will evolve in the coming quarters. So in the top chart, we compare our historic annual growth each quarter versus the rest of Abrafarma. Abrafarma excluding Raia Drogasil. So we see that in 2016, which is not in the chart, and beginning of 17, we had a huge gap over Abrafarma. What happened here is that Brasil Pharma was going out of business, so all of a sudden a huge number of stores were getting closed, and obviously this generated an improvement for us and a decrease for Abrafarma at an aggregate level. Then from the second quarter 17 to the third quarter 18, I think we had modest growth difference with Abrafarma. And in the case of 3Q17 and 4Q17, very small edge with Abrafarma. And then we see now that since the 4Q18, the gap between our growth and the rest of the large chains in Brazil is expanding. And the reason is in the chart below. Here, we compare our quarterly net store addition versus the rest of Abrafarma's net store addition. So in the 1Q17 alone, we had 218 stores being open. This was probably a peak, but still, if you look through 17, the rest of 17, we had quarters ranging from 130 to 160 new store additions, and obviously, in 2018, these numbers started going down, and now in the first quarter 19, it's probably the valley. For the first time in the time series, we opened more stores on our own than the rest of Abrafarma did. What's happening here is that this huge acceleration of store openings that happened, especially in 2017, but to some extent also in 2018, which happened in a very difficult market scenario, it failed to generate value. So companies allocated a lot of capital, they increased leverage to do it, and guess what? Because of entry barriers, because of the market scenario, these stores failed to create value. They actually create pressures. So when you look around the market, there are a lot of companies, especially the larger ones, who try to pursue aggressive growth programs and that today have a lot of challenges in terms of leverage and in terms of profitability. We have companies with negative profitability. Onofre is an example. It's a company with a negative EBITDA that we are in the process of acquiring, but there are other companies in the market and companies that have positive profitability but lost a lot of margin. And then, as a consequence, they now have to reduce growth. They now have to close more stores. And this is creating a very positive outlook for us because we are maintaining our growth. We are very well positioned in terms of prices because of the investment we made and in terms of execution. And I think that now that the growth, the capacity addition cycle has been reverted, I think we progressively walk towards comp normalization. On page 7, we can see here our store footprint. So obviously we have nearly 1,000 stores in Sao Paulo, but probably the most impressive figure is that we already have 220 stores in the Northeast region. And this is a region that we have started pursuing after the merger, probably in 2013, I think. That's when we entered Bahia. I also highlight our entry in Pará. This was our fastest entry. We can see that in Pará, there is a smaller market than Bahia or Pernambuco. In two quarters, we have been in the market for two quarters, and we already have almost half the stores we have in Pernambuco. So this was the most, because we had Big Ben, which was the leader going out of the market, this created a huge opportunity. We acquired 20 locations, historic locations, landmark locations actually, that belong to Big Ben, and we have made a very fast entry into the market. And it's great to see that this operation is doing really, really well. We're projecting very high revenues per store, and also we have seen very good gross margins, almost in line with the average of the company, already in the initial year of operation. So this, not even in Bahia or Pernambuco, we have seen this. So this is very encouraging for the company. Then here, when you look in terms of market share, we gain 90 bps on a national level, and we gain 100 bps in Sao Paulo. As you know, we had a lot of challenges here in Sao Paulo, because first, we decelerated our growth. We once opened more than 100 stores, 120 in Sao Paulo, more than 100 probably in Sao Paulo. We're now opening 60, 70 stores a year in Sao Paulo. And at the same time, we had a lot of new entrants coming to Sao Paulo, which obviously had an effect on us. Now, as some of these new entrants have reduced their opening pace or have stopped growing altogether, and as our price investment has translated in tremendous volume gains, especially in generics, what we see is that we're gaining share again. So we gain 100 bps in Sao Paulo, which is it's not a small feat considering the size of the operation we have here, and consider the fact that we have decelerated our store openings in the market. And then, I'm not detailing, but we are also growing in all the other markets where the company competes. On page 8, we post a consolidation revenue growth of 15.3%, with 14.4% for retail and 34% for 4Bio. When we look at the mix, the best performance was in the front, and we have seen this also happened in the previous quarters. But the main highlight here is that for the first time in a while, generics has converged and actually starting to outpace branded. And what's happening here is there's a huge price erosion in generics. So if you compare today average prices versus same quarter last year, it's a big difference. It's a very meaningful difference. But still, we have been able to grow in tandem with branded, because the volume growth we achieved based on our new pricing strategy has been tremendous. So we're very happy to see this happening, and this is setting the company to get back to our historic growth, to having mature stores around inflation. We believe we are in a firm direction towards achieving that by the end of the year. On page 9, we discuss the comps here. We had 5.6% same-store sales growth with 1.9 for mature stores. So this was the best number in a year for sure. And as the comp base gets easier and as we keep getting sequential improvements, our expectation, as I said, is to converge towards inflation or around inflation by the end of the year. And if we are able to do that, next year is a whole different story. We'll be very, very likely talking about expanding margins, recovering some of the margins we have lost as we invested in prices. On page 10, talking about the gross margin, we see a 50 bps pressure on the quarter. And obviously, this reflects the price investments we have made, especially in generics. But the point I want to highlight here is that these investments did not happen here. They happened in the previous year. So that our structural gross margin had already gone down last year. What happened is that we did a lot of opportunity buys, which generated more trade allowances and offset that structural loss. However, as we normalize opportunity buys, we don't want to create any bubbles or any artificialism into our numbers, so we're back to normal pattern of buying. We now have normalized the trade allowances, and therefore the structural loss that should have appeared last year is finally appearing in our numbers. But there has been no major price investment in the first quarter of this year. And here in terms of cash cycle, we had a 3-day pressure, of which one day is due to calendar related to receivables. The main factor here is loss of operating leverage. On page 11, we talk about expenses, and again, our focus on the previous standard and not on IFRS. As I told before, I don't think IFRS is the best way to look economically at our performance. So we will keep looking internally at the previous standard, and I encourage the market to do so, because I think EBITDA should be a proxy of cash flows. And if you don't consider rental, it's very difficult for that to happen. So looking here at the previous standard, we had a 60 bps pressure on expenses. Obviously, the main factor here is the loss of operating leverage, as the mature comps are growing below inflation. But it affects every line. But there's also some elements here that I think are transitory. The first one is logistics. We are opening this year 3 new distribution centers, the largest one that the company will have in São Paulo, in Guarulhos. We are moving in Rio to a different facility, so we closed our existing distribution center in the countryside of Rio, and we are opening a new one in the metropolitan area of the city. So this should entail big freight gains next year. And we're also opening a DC in Fortaleza, which will reduce our freight expenses, because today we ship from outside the state, and this will also help us with gross margin, because when we ship from out of state, we have a loss, we have a higher taxation that affects our gross margin. So these investments, putting 3 DCs at the same time and closing 1 DC, this generates extra expenses. So we see 20 bps logistic pressure. And then we also have some cyclical things, like 20 bps rental pressures related to the peak in IGPM, which I think at some point normalizes. And we have a 10 bps pressure in energy that's also cyclical. In terms of the EBITDA, we had a 6.5% EBITDA, 110 bps loss versus the first quarter last year. It's also important to highlight here that the first quarter of this year was a very, very strong quarter for us. You can see that it was a higher EBITDA margin than both the third and fourth quarter, regardless of the fact that January is a vacation month and February is a short month, and either February or March, there's Carnival. So the first quarter should always be the lowest quarter in the year. I think this will hold true this year. I think this is the floor for the company and the inflection point for the company. But last year that was not the case. Because the price pressure was still to happen, we had a very good first quarter. So this magnifies the margin loss that we have. But over next quarter, I think it's a very positive quarter for us because of the high inflationary gain on inventories we will have. I'm not necessarily saying that we will do the same margin last year, but even if we don't, it's a much lower loss in margins. And then third quarter and fourth quarter will be the moment of truth, and it will depend on where our revenues are and where our cost containment efforts are. But for sure, it shouldn't be this kind of margin loss that we see in the first quarter. Net income, we lost 90 bps, still under the previous standard. It's basically EBITDA loss and some pressure on depreciation and on interest expenses. But the bulk is the EBITDA loss, offset by the taxes. On page 14, cash flows. We had a $202 million investment in this quarter versus $124 last year. So there's a peak in investments taking place here, especially because of the DCs, which generated a negative free cash flow of $210 million and a total cash consumption of $203 million. I think 18 and 19 are peaks in terms of investment, and then as we maintain the growth level, and as we don't have these major investments in DCs, probably we will have less investments next year. Finally, before passing to Marcelo, just to show how our share price is doing, for us the most important thing is the long-term view. We have generated 25% annual returns since the Drogasil IPO in 2007. But even this year, our share price has performed ahead of Bovespa, but this has more to do with the fact that the share price was very penalized as we ended last year. So these were my prepared remarks. Marcelo will discuss our numbers and our trends, and then I'll get back to talk about capital market highlights before Q&A. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Eugene. Let's go to page 16. Eugene already stressed about the expenses, but I think it's good stress about one thing is important, the 3 CDs. We are opening these 3 CDs this year, maybe this help us, this is to help us to in transportation tax for next year, okay? The other pressure for expenses that we have right now is the energy. We close a bid, we can change our energy provider, and you have 16 stores that you reduce the cost for energy the next year. This is good for us also. The good news for expenses, the people expenses already starts to show a reversal, and maybe you'll be better when we start to grow the mature store above the inflation. The good news for this quarter was the sales, okay? The sales, the main status for sales, the reversing competitors opening. We know how difficult it is to open the stores, and not because the competitors is bad, but it's difficult to do this. We are focusing this 100 times of the time, bringing good stores, not just stores. We know this is a cycle, and the cycle starts to help us to increase the numbers. We are very aggressive in generic price also, and this helps us to increase our market share 1.1% this year. We are using right now advanced analytics to help with pricing, market by market, customer by customer. This will help us for the next quarters also. The other point that helps us a lot in the sales is the digital growth. With the click collect strategies is good for us. The company starts to understand our value proposition to have a store in every corner. And the customer begins to realize the importance of the physical and digital world work together. This helps to increase the number. We are increasing more than 40% in digital business in these quarters. When looking for the openings, also we opened our last big market in Brazil, in the Pará states. We opened 29 stores, starting doing very, very well. And we really believe you can grow very, very quick in this market and be the number 2 in this market in the end of this year. I remain very optimistic about business because the fundamental for this business is still the same, the Asian population. We work very, very strong in the new stores. The marginal IR of new stores is still high. We demonstrate the company discipline in capital allocation. And much more important for us, the digital begins to show relevance for us. We know the customer understand the value using our stores in the corners and the apps. You'll be great for the future of the company. And not only digital, but using advanced analytics will bring us not in other leverage in the future also. And we know if you use this, all these digital strengths in the future, we call you can take care of the health of the customers and the employers in the future for the better life for everybody. Now, Eugenio will take about the new points of the market, and he'll be here for the question and answers. Thank you.
Okay, so I would like to highlight that we did this quarter the first issuance of certificates of real estate receivables in order to raise capital. So it was a debt emission of 250 million in a single tranche with a 7-year maturity at an average cost of 98.5%. So this is very good to diversify our funding sources. Until now, we were doing mostly the ventures, which were bought by institutional investors, and now this is an issuance that has a tax exemption in Brazil, so it's bought by individuals. And I think it shows the strength of the balance sheet of the company. It shows the fact that our credit rating really allows us to do operations like this at a very low cost whenever we need it. And then just on in terms of upcoming activities, we will publish the second quarter result on August 6, 2019, and the third quarter on October 29, 2019. And finally, we have two investor conferences in the coming weeks. The first will be the Itaú conference in New York, May 15 and 16. We will be represented by Marcelo and Gabriel at this conference. And finally, on June 5, 5th and 6th, the Citibank Equity Conference in Brazil. So these were our prepared remarks, and now we can go to Q&A. Thank you very much.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star 1 on your phone at this time. If you'd like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Mr. Joseph Giordano from JP Morgan would like to make a question.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for taking my question. I have a couple ones. So first on the price investment, so we talk a lot about the generics here, but I'd like also to understand how the private label strategy in terms of differentiation and price positioning here is helping to strengthen the competitive positioning of the company. And second, it's going back like to the competitive pressures you have been seeing, particularly in São Paulo. I would like to understand like how you're seeing that evolving, particularly within like the most structured players that are actually the ones that pressure you, given that we started to see some significant store closures from their side. Thank you.
Okay, Joseph, thanks for the question. I think it's very easy for a company to talk about long-term view when the actions you do on the short-term and the long-term, they are aligned. This is a year, actually this 2018 and 19, these are two pair of years in which we had to walk the talk, which really means taking investments that make us stronger on the longer term but have a cost for the short term. So we completely changed our pricing strategy. We invested very aggressively in pricing, especially in generics, but not only in generics. And I think that this was hugely effective. You see that how our growth is normalizing. You see the kind of market share gains that we have achieved, the volume gains in generic, that even though still the prices are lower, but generic is already growing in tandem with branded. And obviously, in a difficult environment, I mean, this helps us also build further barriers from our competitors. So we're very happy with the results. Obviously, this is a considerable pressure and a considerable cost financially for the company, but we are very convinced this is the right strategy for the long term to accelerate the consolidation of the industry. In terms of private label, I think we're also advancing here. We have a 5% front store private label penetration. We have a gross margin of 50% in private label. Every single private label product that we launch has to deliver a gross profit greater than the national brands. So we are very disciplined about that. We have refused in the past to launch in some categories in which we couldn't do that. So just having something cheaper with the same margin is not good enough for us. So there's a lot of discipline by doing this. Every single product that we launch is creating value for the company. And in some categories, it also helps us competitive. But I think the main impact is not necessarily us against competitor. It's really improving our margin mix for the company. In terms of competitive environment, I think the chart we showed at the beginning, showing that the growth deceleration in the market in terms of new store addition, which is a net effect from less openings and more closures, I mean, I think it points to the trend. I mean, a lot of companies try to accelerate growth, especially the national companies. They were trying to grow ahead of what they could. They were trying to enter markets with huge entry barriers, just like these barriers did not exist. They did not have the same process discipline, the same real estate quality, the same standard of execution inside the stores. So in my view, what happened is what was expected to happen. I mean, a growth like that doesn't work. It makes the company weaker rather than stronger, and then the company has to review the strategy. They have to stop growing. They have to close stores. They have to manage for the short term to deliver positive profitability. You can see the level of pain in the market for most P&Ls of public companies who have access. We can see through Onofre, which has huge negative EBITDA. We are about to, we're waiting for CADE for the approval, but we believe this should happen relatively quick. We see no reasons for that transaction not to go through. But we are now in the best possible scenario, in a scenario in which we have good momentum. We have we are very competitive in every regard, including prices, in a moment in which there's a lot of weakness in the market. So the scenario on a relative basis is probably the best we've seen in a while, at least the best in terms of funnel and burst.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Remembering, if you have a question, please press star 1. Mr. Vinicius Ribeiro from Bradesco would like to make a question.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Thanks for taking my question. Just want to clarify a point. So your expectation for same-store sales on mature store to reach inflation to the end of the year, what needs to happen in order for this to materialize? I mean, do you need to see a further improvement in competition, or is it just a matter of comparison basis? And the second question, would just like an update on the, or your omni-channel initiative. Because if I remember correctly, one of the squads that you guys have assembled was focused on that. So just if you guys could give us just a sense of how this process going, and when could we expect this to like go live at a large scale, that would be nice. Thanks.
Okay, Vinicius, thanks for the question. Well, in terms of mature store sales, I think it's a combination of two factors. I think the bulk is really the comp base. So the comp base gets easier as we move through. Right now, we're still comparing a low generics price point with a high generics price point of the 1Q17, 1Q18, sorry. And I think if you look at the margin of the 1Q18, it also shows that. So as the comp base in the second quarter, but especially in the third quarter, it gets easier. The third quarter gets much easier. So I believe that the main impact is from the comps, but also there is some need and some expectation of sequential improvement. But if I have to quantify, it's more on the comp base than on the sequential improvement.
But you can see some improvement also in the average ticket if you go for the other year, okay? Help us the number in the year also.
Yeah, well, when we look today, the average ticket is still pressured.
Yeah.
But as we move forward, the average ticket will improve, and this will drive. But volumes as well. We're doing well in volumes, and I think we'll keep improving. In terms of omnichannel, I mean, this is the main strategy of the company today, and we want to take we want omnichannel to be the next big source of competitive advantage for the company, and to be the next growth engine for the company. Obviously, I mean, we have reinvesting in delivery. We now have a one-hour pilot in some parts of São Paulo. We will extend delivery very quick. And we're doing really, really well in click and collect. Today, a huge percentage of the digital sales is click and collect. But for me, that's not the digital sales are still a fraction of the total that the company sells. And in my view, it will always be a small portion of what we sell. I think the main metric here is not how much is digital sales. The main metric here is how much of what percentage of our revenues are derived from consumers who are digital consumers. Because once a consumer has an app and he can have a much easier experience inside of our store of the app, that's not true today, but it will be true over the next years. We're taking a lot of the pain points of the shopping experience, leveraging the mobile technology to do that. Once you can send reminders for the consumer to refill the prescription, reminder for the consumer to take the meds in the morning. We can send content to the consumer relating to his or her disease. So this is a huge tool for loyalty. And in the end, the digital sales, the means to an end, is part of making consumers more loyal and having a higher share of wallet and having a higher spending from that. For me, success will be when we get 20, 30, or 40% of our revenues coming from digital customers. And it doesn't matter if the digital transactions will be 1, 2, 3, or 4, or 5. What matters is by the time a digital consumer is 20, 30, 40, this is a consumer with a much better interaction, and that interaction then can move the needle, which presently hasn't been. This is not a big bang process. We're always doing improvements. That's the whole idea of Agile. So we launch Click and Collect. We are progressively improving our app. We are extending our delivery infrastructure. We will also do more and more alternatives for the consumer to improve the journey by using the app, by improving the in-store experience. So this is a long journey. But I think that I can see only a small number of companies in the market who have the commitment, who have the resources to do it. It's not an easy thing. Analytics is something that is expensive to do. Hiring data science is not for everybody. Models need scale to work. So I obviously we won't be the only company in the market with a good digital offering. I think there will be more others. But I think we can lead that. And I think there will be a handful of companies completely detached from the rest of the pack.
Okay, thanks. Thanks very much for the question. The answer very clear.
It appears to be no further questions. Now, I'll turn the conference back to the company for their final remarks.
Okay, so thank you all for attending this conference call. And I'd like to summarize some of the points we have discussed. Obviously, this was a very challenging quarter in terms of margins. I think when we look at expense pressures, which was together with gross margins, the culprit here, it's good to see that some of these pressures are transitory, like the logistics investments we're doing this year, like the fact that rent was pressured by the inflation index, even energy, the things we can improve. But obviously, these are pressures that will endure through the year, and they will drive, in the end, a margin pressure for the whole year. We believe this quarter is the inflection point. I think this is the lowest quarter. And I think from now we only move up. That's our expectation at least. Certainly for the second quarter, that's true, because we'll have an inflationary gain on inventories, which will be higher than next year. But I think that in the second semester, when you compare to a more realistic comp of second half last year, by getting more sequential improvements and some of the things we can do, I think we'll be in better place. Probably still pressured, but certainly in better place than we are here. However, I mean, this margin challenge is combined with a very good trend when we look at how the industry structure is evolving. The fact that we are seeing a reversal of the store addition cycle that has increased a lot over the last 2 years. We see a lot of weakened competitors with negative profitability, like the case of Onofre, but not only Onofre, there are other players in that situation, competitors who lost a lot of margin, competitors who are figuring out that expanding outside of state is not easy. What history shows is that every player who grows at home grows well because they know the market. They have a strong brand there. The owners or executives can validate every single location on site. But really, things get very complicated when the size and the geography of that expansion gets increased. At that point, you have to enter in a lot of new markets where nobody knows your brand, who have huge entry barriers. You have to have the structure and discipline to validate locations all over the country in markets in which you don't know. You can have the owners and CEO of the company traveling all the time to faraway markets to validate locations. So you have to have a deep structure, great people, process, analytics to be able to do that. And this is, I think, where we excel. We know how to do it. With the toughest part, which was positioning our brand in new markets, has already gone through. So today we're harvesting all these seeds that we planted in the future, and that's why our expansion is more consistent and deliver and really creates value. I haven't seen a large-scale national expansion who has created value besides ours. Okay. Again, there is a lot of pain in the market, and I think, as I said before, our relative position is probably the strongest it's been in a long time. The fact that we are well-positioned in prices, our new stores are creating value, we are normalizing growth, what we see, a divestment cycle in the market, which a lot of store closures, we see companies really looking more at profitability now than looking at growth. So this is all very, very good for us, and I think it will translate into a much better 2020. If we end the year where we expect, which is a mature store and inflation, I think we'll have a very different 2020. I think it will be a year of recovering part of the margins we lost and no longer of margin pressure. So that's, and our aspiration is not only to have mature stores at inflation, but to be able to grow ahead of inflation, both because we're better positioned in terms of prices and because of digital. This is not a guidance, this is an aspiration, but that's how we're looking at the opportunity we have. So thank you very much for your support, and we remain available for visits, to meeting conference and road shows, and even conference calls. Thank you very much.
Closing and connecting. Have a nice day.